Welcome back, everyone, to Red Spotlight Entertainment, the podcast that follows the movie industry and, of course, all things covering movies. And this past weekend, of course, was a convention that supposedly was supposed to be this blockbuster event, but it ended up being not the case. But nevertheless, there are still plenty of things for us to talk about today, including, of course, what little trailers there were to offer from that convention, as far as what we think are some of the hottest things coming out this year in terms of shows and movies. We've got a lot of reviews that came in from premieres of the latest from Rian Johnson and Steven Spielberg, as well as a collection of titles like House of the Dragon, She-Hulk, Pearl, and of course, Andor, that are coming maybe to a screen near you, at home or in theaters. That's our show today on Red Spotlight number 415. David, so listen, I should say that at the moment, there's a lot of films in theaters right now that I am going to go see. I had hoped to have, get Peter out of his prison. You know, he's currently really busy with school and work and life. And so if you've noticed, as far as our listeners are concerned, he has not been as involved lately. And so, but that doesn't change the fact that there's so much content out right now. So in the meantime, for our listeners, you will be seeing a lot more David and Alexis contributing in his place. And thankfully, there's more than enough content that we can really converse with. I mean, that Dragon Ball film came out at the perfect time because there was no way in hell Peter was going to go see that. Yeah. But then again, you saw it, so we talked about it. Mm-hmm. And then, as you know, fortune would really smile on us, then came the return of Game of Thrones with House of the Dragon, which Alexis is so obsessed with. And so there was plenty of stuff for us to really sink our teeth into. I've had a bit of a cough this past week, so if you excuse me, sometimes I will be coughing and my voice comes and goes a little bit. So just so you know, in case it cracks or it just completely dies on me, that's what happened. And imagine trying to get through it. I'm fine. I feel fine mostly, but this cough refuses to go away. So that's not very comforting, but you will, of course, hear that. David, you wanted to say something?
Oh, yeah. I got Ale the audiobook for Fire and Blood.
Oh, okay. So, that is the book that House of the Dragon is based off.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So, spoilers soon coming probably, or, you know, hopefully she doesn't spoil too much.
Yeah, sometimes she can't help herself. So, I mean, I have to stop her sometimes. And she literally, like, asks once a conversation, is it okay if I spoil this? Like, mostly yes. But maybe when we get more and more entrenched in it, maybe not so much, because we still got plenty of show to go. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned last week, lest we forget, of course, right now, the world is viewing the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II. Mm-hmm. Well, if you forgot, The Crown season 5 is coming back later this year, and it may even come the week, or close to the week, that House of the Dragon finishes its first season. So talk about a back-to-back blockbuster event for us who love these kind of shows. And so I can't wait for season 5. And of course, it's exciting. It's a whole new cast. Imelda Staunton is the new actor playing Queen Elizabeth II. And Jonathan Pryce takes over as Prince Philip this season. So it's going to be, oh my gosh, I cannot wait. And I'm hoping they drop a trailer soon, because, or maybe they may even save it for Christmas time. But again, look, there's so much just right now in theaters. If you go, there is the weird, unexpected, out of nowhere prequel for A24's horror film X, which, you know, it just came out earlier this year, called Pearl. I saw Pearl yesterday. That movie's fucking insane. I'm not even going to, like, mince words. It is, and look, the director, Ty West, wow, he went for it with this movie. I'm a little afraid about how it's going to be received with, like, normie audiences, particularly like normie horror audiences, because it's a lot of flash. It's a lot of style that if we can even just look at how audiences received Elvis, we know that films that are very in your face with stylistic choices these days, unfortunately, aren't the best received. That's what makes me a little bit scared about the movie.
I saw Elvis a couple days ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
And?
I know what you mean. Like, I saw it too. And I mean, I gave it like a 5 stars, honestly.
It's really movie. In your face, but it's really, I mean, it works though. I love the flash. I love the style.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it was because of that. And also just the performance between Austin Butler and Tom Hanks.
Course.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah. And like, we seem to really, like, I don't love the film because I'm not really that into Elvis. I like Elvis, but like, I mean, but you know, I think it was handled the best possible way in which like it's most interesting to, you know, to you and I. But if it were like handled the way Bohemian Rhapsody was handled, then I imagine it would be like much more beloved. I bet you that's what would happen. But that's how it ended up being. However, with Pearl, and I thought this to myself, just because you see the setting, it's, I don't know if you saw X, but it's the exact same location. So they literally save money on sets because it's the exact same location, but just like 70 years earlier. It's a prequel. And the vibes that it goes for, and I even overheard this lady like say it as like we were walking out of the theater. And even Chris Stuckman, when I saw his review after the fact, kind of confirmed what I had felt about it. But it is basically in a way, not to like, you know, diminish the film and putting it in a box, but it is the Wizard of Oz if Dorothy was a crazy psychopath.
Okay.
Nothing magical or fantastical happens, but like the way that the central character, Pearl, played by Mia Goth, that's the actor here, the way that she sees herself and what she wants, and then ultimately what she ends up doing, is imagine a Disney character with all of the, you know, desires and dreams, but then once that is like clear that that is not in the cards for her, then she turns into a murderous psychopathic bitch that is like crazy. Very close to what Harley Quinn would be like, but even more on edge than the Harley Quinn we see in practically any adaptation, because this bitch, there's like nothing redeemable about her. Although she's insane. So like Harley Quinn, there are times where it's like you see the pain and part of you sympathizes, but of course this is a horror film. And what's really interesting about why it reminded me of Wizard of Oz, I mean, there's the farm setting and it's very colorful and vibrant and most of it's in the daylight and it's brilliant how horrific it can be. It's kind of amazing. Also at the same time, I can very much understand fans of the original X, again, which just came out this year, so I'm not sure how much of a fan base there would be just from a movie that came out this year, but it's not the slasher that X was. X very much was, it harkened back to the slashers of the 70s and 80s. This one is not that. It is much more restrained, so it's not like there's a lot of like blood happening, but when it happens, it happens. But I would say it's definitely worth a viewing because, as in the first X, there were sequences that also had that kind of reaction. I don't know if you recall, but when we discussed the first X, there was literally a sequence in which two old people fuck. And that was about as disgusting as it sounds, if not more so. It was gross. And there are aspects, of course, of Pearl that are gross. And if that wasn't enough, the post-credit scene for Pearl made the announcement that there'll be a third film in this trilogy called Maxine coming out sometime. I know this is really strange for A24, but they went all in on Ty West and doing like three horror films. This is like so not like them. It reminds me of like the Fear Street films, although those are like much by design, and they were obviously like they were fully broadcasting the fact that they would be a three-part like, you know, story, like trilogy. Mm-hmm. So whenever Maxine comes out, I don't know. But like, again, Pearl is a sequel to a film, well, technically a prequel to a film that already came out this year. And I agree with the consensus that Pearl makes X just a little bit better as well. So pretty great collection of films. And if you haven't seen either, it does not matter the order in which you see them. Mm. You can see Pearl first, or you can see X first. And I think you can get as much – you can get – I think you get more out of each movie if you see them both, quite frankly.
That's cool.
So it is really cool. And it's not – you know, it's also rare to see a prequel in Pearl where it's like it can stand on its own 2 feet. So hey, it can be done. So that was Pearl. Also out in theaters at the moment is a film called Barbarian. I've not seen that yet. Mm-hmm. It is another horror movie. It is getting great reviews. And I plan to see it at some point. Also, The Woman King, starring Viola Davis, has gotten really, really good reviews. I had not heard of this film until we saw – I say we as in me, Kyle, and Alexis. We went to go see Jaws in IMAX a few weeks back, as we discussed last week. And one of the trailers that played before us was The Woman King, which, quick, brief aside – I thought was hilarious because I had not heard of this movie. And so when it was first playing, I was like, did they just like rip off like Black Panther? But then, of course, as the trailer goes on, then you begin to realize, oh, no, this is a – there's a lot more to this than – and it may even be far better than – I mean, it did. By the time that the trailer finished, it looked a lot better than Black Panther. So I was like, wow, this might be something here. I don't know how this like flew under my radar, but like now it's in theaters, it's getting good reviews. I'm hoping to see that as well. And we'll come back and review it. But that was a great fucking trailer. Viola Davis is getting great reviews for her performance. Of course, she always delivers a great one.
Yeah.
but I thought what was funny though about the Woman King trailer playing in front of our IMAX screening of Jaws was I think it was maybe like one or two trailers later, then they played the Wakanda Forever trailer. Mm-hmm. But that was the first time I'd seen it in a theater. And unless I didn't make a big enough deal about it, that screen that we saw Jaws on was the biggest movie screen I'd ever seen in my life. That trailer, wow. Mm-hmm. Like I know we already like was that was a pretty great fucking trailer when it like debuted weeks ago at Comic-Con. Oh my god, that shit looks amazing. The power behind Angela Bassett's performance as the queen, and then of course even the underwater sequences look fucking amazing. Which, by the way, when you put this against how amazing the underwater sequences look in the upcoming Avatar The Way of Water, or even how great they looked in Aquaman, there is no fucking excuse for the Little Mermaid looking as ugly as it is, as ugly and dark as it's looking.
And I hate the people that keep defending it, going like, oh, is this how you wanted to see it? And it's all this, it's blue, distorted and everything. And they're like, trying to make it sound like she's actually in underwater. And it's, and I'm like,
that's the defense? Really? Yeah. That's the defense. That's more realistic. That's not a defense in my eyes when the idea of it being more realistic is asinine to begin with. It didn't need to be more realistic. Translating the story into more of a realism aspect is not something that improves the story at all. It diminishes it. Like, do you not get that, you bonehead? Go ahead.
Yeah, but yeah. No, just, I agree with you. Just the Little Mermaid trailer. I didn't think about it when I first watched it, but then when, like, seeing that screenshot of the actress, and it's just everything's all great. It looks literally like a stage light on her and everything.
Literally, like, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't until I noticed it then that I was like, oh, yeah, there's no blue anywhere, really, is there?
No blue at all anywhere to be seen. Just a pretty abysmal trailer. Did you have, like, when you first saw it, and now, like, do you have any, like, faith in that film or any, like, excitement for it?
I mean, I wasn't really that excited to begin with.
Of course.
The live-action adaptations haven't been that great. The actress, though, I mean, she can sing. That little piece of it, she really sounded like, I can't remember the original actress name.
Jodie Benson.
Jodie Benson. Like, she sounded a little bit like her and all that. So that probably be singing cool.
Was the only thing that came close to being good in that trailer. Everything else was just like, yeah, no, like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. At this point, yeah. That trailer looked just abysmal. But back on the Wakanda Forever trailer, that's also coming out in November. And I'm really looking forward to it based on how amazing that's looking. But speaking of films that are going to be coming out pretty fucking soon, as a matter of fact, we have what, and by the way, I was just looking at my list of films that I've seen this year. And it's been, low-key anyway, a bit of a comeback for rom-coms or just comedies in general in the theaters. And I really wonder what's behind that, both on streaming and in theaters, I would say. And one of the ones, I want to say it was at TIFF. That's one of the, I think that's the Toronto Movie Festival, Film Festival. A lot of festivals happening right now. I literally just saw a critic on Twitter say that he just, in one weekend, saw 22 movies. That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've like seen 28 movies this year. So just to see 22 of them in a single weekend is, I don't know how that's even possible.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. But he did it, I guess. Anywho, there are a lot of film festivals happening at the moment. So we're getting a lot of buzz and press for what could be some of the awards contenders or just movies in general to look forward to this year. Evidently, one of them is not Don't Worry, Darling. And I don't think we need to go into that because the whole drama behind that movie is pretty well publicized and everybody kind of knows what it is. It's just kind of a disaster. The only person that maybe walks away looking good is Florence Pugh, and Chris Pine. But everybody else, like, around her is just not, you know, looking the best. Olivia Wilde and her career are kind of left in this place where, I don't know. It's really sad because, you know, her first movie, Booksmart, was so fucking good. It was one of my favorite movies of that whole year, you know? And like to see like the just in the next couple of years how far things have just kind of dipped for her and her image, it's not fun to see. And you know, I also really liked the trailer for Don't Worry Darling. I thought it looked really interesting when it first played. But of course, it debuted. It didn't get a good reaction at all. Now, again, I don't think the movie will be all that bad, but because of all the drama that happened behind the scenes, I don't think anybody's interested in it. So to me, that film is like no longer like priority viewing for me.
Mm-hmm.
When there are so many others that I would want to see. So that was one of the films that had its like debut at a festival. And of course, the last thing on anybody's mind was the movie itself. So that's never a good sign. You know, honestly, like with She-Hulk, take She-Hulk, for example. We're not talking about She-Hulk. Well, nobody is. But I mean, particularly you and I are not, because what is there to say, really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems to me that people don't seem to grasp this. And I know we're going to get into it. I have a clip that I want to share with Randolph and what she complained about Andor coming up. But this really, like, look, She-Hulk, in case people forgot, and again, you'd be forgiven if you did, has been dropping new episodes every single week. And I, for the life of me, have seen, like, next to nobody talk about what went down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean in terms of Easter eggs or whatever there is. I just mean in terms of like what the show is doing and if it's good, or it's like, oh, wow, that episode of She-Hulk last night was so good. See, next to nothing about that show. And I feel like that suggests there's nothing about your show that's actually there to say. And when there's nothing there to say, that's just not a good sign. So that's like with Don't Worry, Darling, with what's part of the issue there. But as far as like what other premieres there have been, two particularly come to mind, both that happened on the same night. And evidently there were some reporters slash critics that were able to see both on the same night. And I hate them because they were some of my most anticipated films of the year. One of which was for the sequel to what I consider to be one of the modern day masterpieces of our time, Knives Out, by Rian Johnson. His next whodunit, which includes Daniel Craig coming back as Benoit Blanc, Glass Onion, and has a blockbuster cast, and has been one of my most anticipated films for the longest time. They even dropped the trailer, but I was far more enthused by the reaction to it, which suggests it may be just as good as the first one. And if that's the case, wow. I mean, in some ways, was there ever any doubt? Maybe some on my part, because like I love the first movie so much.
Yeah.
How can you get close or better than that? And if he does, which it sounds in some ways he did, wow. Wow. And what a Christmas present for us, because this is supposed to come out Christmas week. So, oh my God. I cannot wait. I think I even saw some reviews that said this was like Daniel Craig's best performance ever as an actor. And I mean, I know there were a lot of great performances that year that, you know, to me, and I mean the year 2019, that didn't really get all that recognized, even though they were like nominated. But I thought like, you know, ScarJo and Adam Driver and Marriage Story were amazing, as well as Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce and the two popes. Evidently, excuse me, there were no match for Joaquin Phoenix. But the one that kind of got overlooked was Daniel Craig. And so part of me hopes Netflix kind of like launches a full throttle campaign to get Daniel Craig nominated if it is, in fact, his best performance and it's for this character. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to the film, and the reviews, of course, spoke really, really highly of it. What about you? How is your level of excitement for this movie, and what are your ultimate expectations?
It's more so worry, only because, you know, sequels nowadays, you know, it's always hit or miss with a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, though, the cast is completely different. Daniel Craig is the only constant thing on it, and if people are noticing his performance in this one, I mean, within the first one, you know, people were basically talking about everyone else besides Daniel Craig. I know they mostly talked about just seeing something different from him, but not really like his performance in general. But yeah, I guess if people are excited about it, then yeah, I'm excited about it too.
No, absolutely. And one of the other ones that is for sure one of my most anticipated movies coming out later this year, I believe it's going to come out Thanksgiving week, as a matter of fact. And that's going to be the next feature film by my favorite director and a lot of people's favorite director, Steven Spielberg. Which, I mean, the man just had a movie out last year. It is amazing how quick his turnaround can be. And this particular story, or at least this movie, The Fabelmans, is, I think, like one of the only few movies that he himself took part in the writing process with his screenplay writer, Tony Kushner, who, if you don't know Tony Kushner, you know, has collaborated with like Spielberg numerous times, including his 2005 movie Munich, also Lincoln, and then most recently last year's West Side Story. Mm-hmm. He penned the scripts for those films. So obviously we expect some kind of greatness there. Now, the trailer dropped, and I just thought it was so full of wonder, mm-hmm. and just like love and passion for movies. And I don't know if like you knew much about what this movie was supposed to be or if you got it from the trailer, but it very much is Spielberg the movie, and that is this story is the story of his childhood, like to a T. And I would actually recommend, and I think you did already see this, but in case for those who didn't, going back, I suspect it most likely would be on HBO Max, considering this was an HBO Films original. The documentary movie, I believe Susan Lacy directed it, Spielberg. And in Spielberg, there is, I mean, because Spielberg is a documentary on his life and his life with the movies. And so a lot of what was in that documentary is basically in this movie, mm-hmm. like to a T, as I said previously. And the casting is so good. Michelle Williams, Paul Dano, so many like little, you know, character actors here and there. And apparently, as has been Spielberg's like mantra, it looks like, for a lot of his movies, he found a complete unknown to play the version of himself. The young version of himself that you see throughout the trailer. And the reviews have come out, and they've been very, very good. Now, I did see a couple of reviews that were like, yeah, but it's a bit corny. And I'm like,
I feel like it just comes with it when it comes to a movie about art. Just not just like movies, but like just art in general. Because how do you capture that, honestly, in a movie? Like, how do you capture the reason why someone loves movies, the reason why anyone would wake up every day to make a movie? So
without it coming across like that, you know. Also, it also comes with it being a Steven Spielberg movie. Like, hello, see, this is the thing. Like, he's always been pretty sentimentalist. He's always been, in his movies, kind of sweet. And it's like, I believe Houston Colley tweeted this, like, oh no, critics saying that The Fablemans, the latest Steven Spielberg film, is a little corny. Whatever will we do? It just comes with who the filmmaker is. And so it's like, but I don't know if you are aware of this, but that's been an ongoing like criticism of Steven Spielberg for like decades now. It's like, oh, he's too sentimentalist. Like, oh, he's too corny. And it's like, quite frankly, that kind of like critique to me is very like faux pas, as in like, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't register to me because like I can't possibly view that as like a negative. But like, I guess like, his particular style sometimes just like, it's like, oh, it's too sanitized, or oh, it's not real. And it's like, okay, well, you mean nothing to me at that point then. Like, I'm for real. Like, I don't think that's like, yeah, that's just not very fair, especially with like, I can think of like far more critical things to say about Nolan's style that nobody wants to bring up. But anyway, we're not going to address that. Like, that whole teaser trailer for Oppenheimer is without question one of the most obnoxious trailers I've ever seen in my life. No, seriously. For obnoxious sake, you have like the fucking clock, you know, the numbers are ticking, and then it's like, wah, you know, the noise, the volume just like picks up, and then it just like ends like the day, the world, blah, blah. Who cares? Whatever. And the reaction from audiences has been like, yeah, that was weird. Like, okay. I'm sorry, but like Nolan is such an overrated person and filmmaker. I mean, he's great, but people need to be far more, I would say, critical of his worst tendencies that I think hinder his films. Whereas I don't think Spielberg's worst tendencies hinder his own movies. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the trailer came out and I thought it was beautiful. And I love movies that, you know, delve into movie making and why, you know, movies are great. So what was your reaction to it?
It looks nice. Like I mentioned before, like, I'm very curious as to how he captured why the main character loves movies and all that. I don't really see why. I mean, I just don't see how anyone can do that. So that's really curious. Also, it's nice to see Paul Dano play a normal person, not like a psychopath.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I've only seen him play like psychopaths or weirdos or something. So I'm kind
of
excited.
This will be a nice change of pace, and I also love the sentiment that what Steven said, I believe, because like this is the first movie of his to ever debut at any film festival. Mm-hmm. So this is a very special movie for him. And while, of course, he did confirm this was not the end of his career, he's still going to make movies. There was a lot of like faux pas, in my view, speculation about whether it would be like his retirement. It never was going to be that. But he did say, because, I mean, in the last few years, I want to say from like 2017 to 2021, I want to say, he did lose his parents recently.
Mm.
Like, they were very old. They were like late 90s, like very late 90s, both of them. Both his mom and his dad. And Steven is 75. Like, he's no spring chicken. Like, he had his parents for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get to have them around, like, you get maybe a false sense of security that, oh, you think they're just never going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they do one day. All very, like, in the same span of a few years. And I believe he said at this premiere that, like, making this movie was his way of bringing them back to life, which really tells you how much he missed them. Mm-hmm. So look, the idea of this movie coming from him at this point in his life really, really always got me excited. And so I'm very much excited for this movie and expect great things, because I love Steven. I love his movies. And to me, it's like his sensibilities and what works in movies always gel with me. So crossing my fingers, expect really, really good things. I should say, for the record, evidently, Peter Martinez has launched a full-scale campaign against me, somehow like proclaiming this to be my favorite film of 2022. And so, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. There are so many films that are coming out this year that, like, for example, I just want to go ahead and before we move on to the D23 stuff, just go ahead and take the moment to acknowledge about like what there is left just for this year that I'm, you know, looking forward to or just going to watch, or just films that are out there. So like, there's Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Avatar, The Way of Water, Halloween Ends, Black Adam. There is, of course, The Fabelmans, Disenchanted, Hocus Pocus 2, Strange World, Del Toro's Pinocchio. There's a new Henry Selick animated movie called Wendell and Wild that'll be coming out. The Whale with Brendan Fraser and Sadie Sink. And you know what? I think I went on a tangent somewhere, because I forgot to mention just later this month when I had said that there was like a comeback with rom-coms and comedies. Bros, which is written by Billy Eichner and directed by Nicholas Stoller. And the letterbox description is: two men with commitment problems attempt a relationship. That's a great summary, description for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the trailer, and the trailer is promising. It looked, and of course, the reviews that came out of TIFF themselves were promising, with many people declaring it the comedy of the year.
Mm.
And it would be pretty special to think of it that way, because I think in general, we need more successful comedies and romantic comedies in particular at the theaters, because I think it's a lost art in a way, and I want more of them being made.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Bros, it would also add in a different element to it, with it being like I would say the first like full blown LGBTQ rom-com from a studio, a major studio. Now, there've been plenty of them in a lot of the art house studios or small independent outlets that, or even on streaming, there's a lot of content out there for LGBTQ audiences. But when it comes to like mainstream audiences in the box office or blockbuster, shall we say, there's just not much of it out there. And I don't recall a mainstream comedy or a mainstream like romantic comedy featuring two men. So this will be something of an experiment, shall we say. The reviews have been promising, and I'm very curious to see how it is going to be received. Of course, I feel like no matter how good or not it is, you already know there will be a lot of people who are going to have it out for this movie. And if history, or shall we just say like last week was any indication, there will be some kind of like premeditated controversy. Just because, can you believe they made a movie with gay people? We need to boycott this. How dare they try to poison the minds of our children? Blah, 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 blah. That kind of stuff. So that's not going to be very fun when that comes out. So yeah, there's that. Anyway, D23. David, did it strike you as a bit strange just this year that it's been 3 whole years since the previous convention took place in 2019? And it seemed as if like Disney was more than content with just reviewing all of the projects that they already announced last time and showing maybe one or two new things of it, and then at the same time refusing to announce anything about what's currently in development or what's happening in the next 2 years. Because it just seemed to me that that's what happened. This was a convention of just reviewing things and not really wanting to reveal what new projects are coming our way.
Yeah. And I remember, I think it was you, like, showed a tweet on the group chat, someone being complaining about people's expectations of D23, how they haven't shown anything new or something like that. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And you know, I see that all the time with Nintendo. Yeah, Nintendo, they do these Nintendo Directs, and every single time people always go like, there wasn't anything big announced, there wasn't a lot of games talked about and all that. So like I see that all the time. The major difference though is that every single Nintendo Direct that comes out, it comes out every few months all the time, so they can't really show anything new every single time. It's been 3 years for D23. And not only that, it's been years with Marvel since Endgame, and everything that they showed, we already knew about it. We've known about it for years, and they just show a few minutes of trailers on a couple, which is, you know, I enjoyed a few and all that. But nothing majorly new. And so that's just the major difference between what they showed at D23 and just what I always see with Nintendo and all that. And I wouldn't say it was disappointing for me. I don't know if others did say it was disappointing. It's just, I do wish there was a bit more, basically. And so, I don't know. I enjoyed some of the animated stuff, but I mean, it's animation. I think they have far more room to show something new on that than
what was already there.
Than the Marvel or Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's like, as far as like Disney's concerned, I feel like a lot more focus needs to be on how poorly run their studio is, like the Walt Disney live action studio, because I just don't understand them. Like, they had pretty clear successes with both Cruella and the Jungle Cruise, and the idea that they're not moving forward with sequels immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the thing that pisses me off about them. Most assuredly, Cruella is getting... They already announced Cruella 2 a year ago. Is that movie like not happening until 5 years later? They have to stop this. Whatever interest or any worth there would be in a sequel, it has to come out immediately. Like, make it now. Mm-hmm. Not 5 fucking years later. No one's going to care. And they refuse to listen to reason on that. That's the issue. But whatever. Now, when it comes to Star Wars, who the fuck knows? They don't even know.
Hmm.
Like, there are no movies coming out. They just pulled Rogue Squadron off the schedule. Like, who didn't see that shit coming? That wasn't going to happen after how poorly received Wonder Woman was. And I know there are a lot of people who were saying it was a great idea for a movie. I didn't care. So I'm happy to see it canceled. Notice that they just didn't discuss at all Taika Waititi's Star Wars movie, which I guess that tells you that's not happening anymore. So what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
All they had they threw a Mandalorian trailer. I don't care. So I'm not talking about it. What else was there? Well, there was a trailer they announced that Bad Batch was coming back in January. It seems a bit delayed, but okay. Then sure, I'll catch that. You know, but whatever. I guess they talked a little bit more about a show called The Skeleton Crew, which I don't care, but okay. I guess we'll see when it comes out. There was a trailer for Tales of the Jedi, which they call a 6-episode event, which is really just 2 Clone Wars arcs. Like, there's nothing like that separates that from the Clone Wars. It's the same animation, it's the same style. Same vibe, too, about Dooku and Ahsoka, which, you know, in theory, I guess it's not that objectionable. Like, I'll see it, sure. But, like, it's more of the same, so there's not really any excitement there to begin with. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the best thing you could say about that whole thing was the Andor trailer, which just looks very good because it's so disconnected from everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also made to feel and look different from everything else. And, you know, I would also say it's kind of appropriate that kind of the first look reaction, you know, and sometimes, look, we say, you know, in the Grace Randolph, this person gets some things right in terms of, like, her, you know, her viewpoints and whatever she says. But there was a clip that's been trending this week that really kind of, like, it's classic Randolph here in that, like, it is a microcosm, I would say, of what a lot of people want out of these things. And so, and how they judge and rate these things. And I'm not going to lie, that particular clip that I'm about to play with you really got me excited. So it kind of had the anti-effect.
Mm-hmm.
I think of what she thought it was going to be, you know? So let me go ahead and put that up here, but there was some pretty hilarious reactions to it. I mean, it is a pretty hilarious clip.
Also,
but
the first Disney Plus Star Wars or Marvel show to have pretty much zero Easter eggs. I mean, someone's like, hey, there's something going on in Scarif, but that's like it in the first 4 episodes. And I think that will really hurt its reach in fan circles and on social media because there isn't anything to really talk about or get excited about when it comes to big picture, you know, the franchise as a whole. It's so crazy to me that Disney and both the Marvel and now clearly the Star Wars divisions doesn't understand the importance of Easter eggs. I mean, help me do my job. I mean, this is this kind of discussion, the fan reaction and speculation and fan theories is what has made this new kind of blockbuster leave all their content in the dust because of the conversations it's able to generate. And the fact that Hollywood seems unaware of that, because, you know, you have the same problem over with DC that Warner Brothers is trying to build, and I think also a little bit with Harry Potter, is incredible to me that they would just so not know their own product and why it's been so successful. Kevin Feige, I thought, knew it, but yet how do you explain the lack of Easter eggs on She-Hulk and Ms. Marvel? It should be a mandate. I mean, I can understand some creators being like, I don't want to do that. And I'd be like, tough. You want to play in my sandbox? You play with my rules. There's chunks in the sand, and they're Easter eggs. Why else would we dig in the sand? I think they don't understand the content, and I think they don't understand the people who enjoy it. And that's always been a problem for Hollywood. You have people who don't understand and in some cases are disdainful of the consumer. And it's ridiculous. All right, so anyway.
Yeah, that the more I hear it, the more insane that clip sounds like, because I feel like it doesn't take into account the idea that a lot of these particular movie executives that have worked on Harry Potter and DC and Marvel and Star Wars already fucking do that. They already know how vapid and easy it is to, like, please their audiences. And all of those franchises that she mentioned already have so many Easter eggs in them. Like, it's gotten to the point where, like, live-action Star Wars on Disney Plus had become nothing but Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the fuck she's talking about there. Like, oh, how, like, how come, like, they don't know what their audience is? No, they do know, and they have been being pleased in that way. So I don't know what that tangent was about. But really, the thing that she really, I think, David, you wanted to say?
I was just going to say, it's going to be rude, but how much do you, like, suck at your job that you need Easter eggs to talk about certain shows and movies? Like, you know, we mentioned that we're not going to talk about She-Hulk, but if we did, though, like, we can go on for a pretty long while talking about some of our complaints of the show, maybe nice things here and there and all that, but, you know, I don't understand why you need an Easter egg to talk about the quality of a show. And but also, though, like, you know, when talking about shows, like, on, you know, when people post it on Twitter, just don't, you know, the studio shouldn't rely on what people talk about on Twitter. Because, I mean, yeah, like, sure, it gets people talking about it and all that, but, you know, I think you just gotta wait from the beginning and the end of what happens at your show to really, like, know what happened, to really know if people like it or not. You know, I just, especially because a tweet is not gonna really fully share one's thoughts fully of the quality of an episode and all that. Also, my sister mentioned House of the Dragons has no Easter eggs at all in the show, and people are able to talk about it a lot. So, yeah.
There's like one or two. There's the sword, the Valyrian steel sword. That's about it. You don't need that.
Yeah.
You don't need that. Yeah, sure, exactly. You don't need that. So it's like, I feel like with but at the same time, I would say that there are people who think that way, though. A lot of, like, fans, particularly on Twitter, which I don't know how many that is, but one of the things that I think kind of revealed where this, like, rant comes from, this guy on Twitter, his name is Ethan, at Lanky Frampard, tweeted, at one point she says, help me do my job, which says it all.
Yeah.
Easter eggs are for people like Grace who are not interested in engaging with art. Easter eggs are for social media buzz and engagement in the most shallow sense of the word. Easter eggs line her pockets, not good art. That's true. And, like, Peter's response to that was, the criticism that I think holds water is the fact that her and people like her made a career of shitty clickbait Easter egg videos, and if they don't have that, they don't make money. So it's less about the quality of the art and more about her bottom line. Which is true.
Yeah.
Which is very, very fucking true. Anyway, the Andor trailer was good.
Yeah.
Not as good as the first one, but pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, the reaction that Grace had, though, has got me really excited, because you know what really, is the clip that I would say from her initial takeaway of Andor that got me the most excited was when she said this.
Listen, Andor's 12 episodes alone might be too much.
Wrong one.
But there's
this one.
Force choking. There's no force choking or lightsaber slashing, so that makes those boardroom meetings a lot less fun. And maybe I think that's part of the problem, because at least so far there's no Jedi, there's no Sith, and there was only one alien briefly. It's just humans in space with paperwork. And you're like, okay, I guess let's try it. I mean, I think, you know, obviously this is supposed to be the beginning of the rebellion, but in the first four episodes, I guess the beginning of the rebellion would be kind of boring if you were going to watch it unfold in real time. But, you know, I think this seems to be a tougher story to tell than we and Tony Gilroy anticipated.
So, no Jedi, no Sith, no lightsabers. Sign me up. Sign me up. Yeah. Thank you. Because also, they shouldn't be in this story.
Yeah. Also, the beginning of the rebellion sounds like a very interesting story. We saw the beginnings of the Empire, you know, like how they changed everything. People had to change their money and all that. People had to get in line in order to leave a planet or something like that. And like, those were all very interesting and it caused tension, in the Bad Batch. I'm talking about the Bad Batch. It caused tension of, how the heck are they going to get out of here and all that. So, the beginnings of the rebellion, I mean, who knows? Like, how were people inspired in the first place?
Yeah. Same goes for me. Now with Marvel, a lot of it I don't care, but a lot of it that they did say at D23 was just like more reasons to not care for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they dropped the Secret Invasion trailer, which, you know, it didn't look too bad. Parts of it looked kind of good and interesting. But it's pretty impressive how they released a trailer, and I still don't know what the story is.
Yeah, there's far too many questions with this trailer. They were hitting it pretty hard with the whole spy genre
feel.
Of it, spy yeah. feel of it. But it's just, are the bad guys the Skrulls? Is it like a different faction of the Skrulls that are wanting to take over? Why is Fury so important to the Skrulls? Like, how is, you know, in the trailer he says that he's the only one standing between them and what they want. Okay, what exactly is that? I mean, I know they can probably, that's a big thing that I'm just gonna have to wait for the show and all that. But it's just the Skrull aspect of it is what's really a big question, because they established that they're good people. So, what's going on with that?
Yeah, I guess, right? I don't know. Not too excited about any of that. One thing I will say, well, nothing to do with Marvel, but like, the Thunderbolts, I don't know, to me, they released like the concept art of who's going to be on the team. I wasn't impressed.
I like who's that guy? Yelena's dad.
David Harbour. Not the Patriot, but like the Red Guardian.
Yeah, Red Guardian. That's the only thing I'm excited about, honestly. It's just, he was funny in the movie, and I think he might be great. For comedic relief. But that's about
it. Yeah. I don't care about Ghost or the Taskmaster.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I mean, I think one tweet summed it up. The Ghost was like the Ant-Man and the Wasp villain.
Yeah. The problem with that is that she literally became the bad guy in the movie because she was used as a weapon. And so now that's happening again. What's up with that?
So, did you enjoy House of the Dragon this week?
Yeah. It was weird, but, you know, overall really good.
Weird as in how?
You know what it is. Well, it's funny though.
The sex came back in this week pretty big, with bigly, as Trump would say.
Yeah. My sister saw the episode with my dad. That was funny.
Oh, God. That's a reaction, I'm sure.
That was funny. No, but I mean, honestly, overall though, like, it was honestly really, really good. The brothers, I mean, their relationship, it's always so interesting when they're together, honestly. Like, when they were interacting and everything, I was kind of like, oh, I kind of like missed this, you know, even though it was only a couple episodes, but I kind of missed it. And then, Damon had to all fuck it up and everything. So, but yeah, I remember there just feeling a lot of tension between those two towards the end. I was honestly like worried for Damon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like in a place where this show is really, really good. I was really impressed that the king actually fired his hand, Otto Hightower.
Yes.
He finally got rid of him, and it's like, whoa, that was unexpected. And I'm really curious to see where this thing goes next. And I mean, I wonder if it wasn't going to be a mistake, because one way or the other, he's not going away entirely. He will be behind the scenes, probably like working against Rhaenyra becoming the next queen. You know, we'll saw Rhaenyra lie to Alicent about, you know, her relations with her uncle. And at some point, that's not going to go over well with Rhaenyra. I think Alexis and I discussed the fact that that may become the point where, like, there's a wedge torn between those two. Because, you know, Rhaenyra completely broke Alicent's trust in that regard. So Daemon gets banished again. He needs to learn to be a lot more subtle and be a lot more patient.
Yeah.
If he wants that, like, that throne, because this is the second time his, like, lack of patience has gotten him banished. Like, in just, like, four episodes. But yeah, when that thing was going down, where, like, you know, he took her out and then they went to that whorehouse, I was like, oh no, this is going to go where I think it's going to go, isn't it? And yep, sure enough, it did. It very much did. And that's ew.
Yeah.
Although it is interesting, of course, he couldn't go through with it. So now there was speculation, because we do see the boy that followed Rhaenyra in there, that maybe this was a kind of like a three-dimensional chess move on Daemon's part to get Otto fired. I don't know if that was all that planned out, but we see the boy, like, go report to Otto, and then Otto has to go tell the king. Then we also see that boy later on in the episode walk in, I guess, that hotel that Daemon is staying at with, like, his main prostitute. So I wonder what was going on there. But, you know, Rhaenyra was very clever to point that out. Like, hey, the only reason you know about this is because I was being watched in the first place. And why do you think I was being watched? Because your hand, you know, dear dad, is working against us. And it was like, huh, you got a point. Which, I mean, look, I will say, I really do like Viserys as a character. And I want the best for him. So there is that. But I guess we'll see. Your thoughts?
Yeah, honestly, I kind of got excited when he fired his hand, just because he has been pretty very manipulative throughout the show. And I'm very curious how him being gone is going to affect Alicent. Because you guys mentioned last week, you know, that she kind of gains a little bit of confidence in the last episodes, where she just doesn't really care what her dad says anymore. You know, her focus is on her children and her husband and all that. So with him being gone, honestly, I really hope Alison is like the MVP by the end of this the season, because I don't know. I'm rooting for her to just kind of like take over, not like Cersei style takeover, but, you know, really maybe kind of be like a little antagonist for Rhaenyra somehow. I don't know.
I think it's going that direction.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited about her. And that was actually interesting what you just said about the boy probably working for Daemon or something, or with Daemon's main prostitute. That's actually kind of interesting. I don't know. I feel
yeah. It makes you think if it was by design. Although when you watch the episode, it doesn't occur to you because it seemed kind of like a half-assed attempt,
mm-hmm.
more so than like coming across as like that planned, that perfectly planned anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that is interesting. But I guess, you know, we will see the next episode this week, and then maybe we'll have more to say to it when we come back. Anything else before we go today?
No.
All right. Well, thank you, David, so much for being on here, and thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you back next week here on Red Spotlight. Remember to catch our podcast every single Sunday, anywhere you listen to podcasts. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.